That's exactly what Joseph's going to do, right? When his brothers come before him, he's going to still forgive them, despite all that. And I think that, this, again, my mindset right now is just on elders and relating to this to eldership. You know, elders are men that are going to remember. You know, I was there too. You know, and that's going to enable them to have the kind of patience and mercy and grace with people that is going to be necessary when dealing with when people mess up. And so again, understanding I made those mistakes too helps us when we're trying to help others when they make mistakes. So don't forget where you came from in terms of your values as well as your mistakes. Okay. All right, so moving on a little bit. So the 7 years of famine began. The plenty comes to an end in verse 53. The famine begins in verse 54, and the famine is in all the lands. So it's not just Egypt, right, where this famine is occurring. It's generally speaking, it's the entire region that is experiencing the famine. So and yet, of course, we know that it was only Egypt that had the blessings of extra fruitfulness to be able, and the knowledge that it was going to happen, that they would prepare for it. And so God makes wise provision for this famine by sending Joseph ahead to Egypt to store up all of these things. And so, again, we need to trust in God's provision and His providence. Joseph sees here, I think, he begins to see these things coming to fruition, all these, the dreams that he'd been given when he was younger. I think he's probably starting to understand now what that was all for and why he is where he is. And of course, reminded of Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, where it says, God works all things together for good for those who are called according to his purpose. It seems that Joseph, obviously that hadn't been written yet, but he understood it, I think. And so a Christian today also, I think, needs to have that on their hearts, that maybe everything doesn't seem great, but God's got to have a purpose and God's got a hold of this.
Okay, so the famine wasn't just for Egypt. It was for
all the lands, yeah.
So how would people in other lands know the
Well, they wouldn't. They would not have known, which is why the other lands weren't able to make provision for themselves to save up, whereas Egypt did. And so that's why it says, moving on, it says, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So only in Egypt was there grain to make bread, bread symbolically speaking. And so the land of Egypt is famished, and then they start crying to Pharaoh, and he says, go to Joseph, whatever he says, dude. And at that point he starts selling the grain. But even all the other lands have to go to Egypt to get grain, which is, of course, why his brothers go there in the first place.
I imagine travelers would spread the word that Egypt's doing well.
Yeah, exactly. That word of mouth would have spread the fact that there was grain in Egypt that they could go buy. Yeah. Palestine, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, we tend to think, this is ancient times, and so, no one went anywhere or did anything, and they had just no ability whatsoever, and that's obviously not the case. I mean, they had caravans of people. That's, like you said, that's how Joseph got down there in the first place. There was trade. I mean, people were moving all over the place, albeit much more slowly. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So things would have the word of mouth, right, would have gotten this stuff out, so they would have known.
Yeah, you can really see the providence of God in all of this part right here.
Yeah.
Because through this dream that Joseph had, allow them to store up this grain. God could have just as well have told Jacob, well, there's going to be a famine coming after 7 years of plenty here. You guys need to store up for yourselves too. But he did.
Yeah. Bubble.
When Joseph became prime minister of Egypt, he told what he would do for
it's important to remember that this was prophesied about that was going to happen long before. And so again, the key, I think, to this chapter, as Tom pointed out, is God's care, His sovereignty, His control, His power, His provision, His love for His people. That's the real big key, I think, that we need to see here as we come out of chapter 41 and move into chapter 42. Okay, does anybody have anything on chapter 41 before we move to chapter 42? Okay, so beginning in chapter 42, begin reading with me in verse 1 if you would. When Jacob learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die." So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt, but Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and he was the one who sold to all the people of the land, and his brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. And Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them. But he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. "Where do you come from?" he said. He said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." And Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them and said, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land." And he said, "No, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies." Okay. So the first thing we see here is Jacob tells his sons, what? "Hey, I heard you can go buy grain in Egypt. Why are you standing?" I love this phrase. "Why do you stand there looking at one another?" Now, yeah. And so what's the picture that you get when, you know, he's probably gathered them together and he says, "Why aren't you doing anything? You know, go down there and get something." And they're kind of like, yeah.
One thing you've got to realize, you're not children. You would say that to children would be one thing. But these are grown men.
Yeah.
They all have families. Even Benjamin has children. In fact, I think he had 10 children. He went down and left. So he had to have children at that point. So, you know, these are grown men. And he said, "Why can't you give yourself to yourself?"
Yeah.
This grain, you gotta be
Yeah, absolutely. And the other part, though, and I don't know if there's anything to this, but you got to think that anytime the word Egypt comes up, it's got a grade on them. Right. And that's evident. I mean, that is clearly evident throughout this chapter that what they did to Joseph never leaves them. They are guilty. Their consciences are bothering them. And clearly, they have never said anything to their father.
Well, it's evident that the older brothers knew that they had a problem. They knew they were out of food. They knew they needed to do something. And they knew that Egypt had food.
And
they're just standing there looking at each other and not doing anything, probably because they didn't even want to go to Egypt.
Right. I think that's exactly it. They didn't want to go to Egypt because it just had a bad connotation, because they knew they had sold their brother there and they didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Hey, what are you trying to do with
it? And,
like, you know what you should be doing.
Yeah. And
why don't you go and do it?
Literally, the phrase means to look questioningly at one at the other. And so it's like, it's almost as if when he said, you need to go to Egypt, they're like, are you guys serious? Like, you really, I don't want to do that, you know? Because they knew. It was always going to be a point of...
They didn't know what had happened.
No, they didn't. I mean, they didn't know, but they knew that that was the direction he was sent, and it was always going to have a bad connotation. Yeah, well, and we'll see how that kind of progresses as we go through. Okay, so when he is elevated to prime minister, he's 30. And then you add 7 years of plenty, and now we're into the time of famine, and we're not told to, you know, about it probably a year or so, you know, into the famine. So he's probably about 38 at this since he was 17. So he's been there for 20 years. 21 years at this point. He's probably, I think I read one thing, said he was probably about, I was trying to figure it out. I mean, he's probably a few years younger, he's probably about 25, something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
My dad used to have a saying, why are you standing around with your teeth?
Yeah, you got to do something. Get up and do something.
Do it.
All right. And so they live with this secret for 20 years. I mean, can you imagine carrying the weight of that guilt around for 20 years? No, and it's all of them. It had to be this thing. There had to be tension amongst themselves, right? And between their father. They could never have a right, again, and this just, I don't think I even need to say anything about the, you know, the allegory here. They could never have a right relationship with their father as long as they were keeping this secret. As long as they were keeping that from him, it was never going to be right.
Well, and Reuben,
yes. Yeah. Verse 22, you know, they tell each other, you know, we're guilty concerning him. We saw him, his distress when he begged us and we did not listen. And that's why this has come upon us. And Reuben said, did I not tell you not to sin against the boy, but you did not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood. No.
Later on, Judah steps up, and Judah then takes control and becomes a Joseph man. He accepts leadership and he goes ahead and does that. But before that, they run out.
No, they're not taking responsibility. Yeah. And it's almost like because there were so many of them that none of them ever really kind of took, you know, it didn't fall upon any one of them until this point. Yeah, Sam?
All through Jacob, a good deal of
mentioned that while the risk of any of his sons was affected what happened to Joseph. And he distinctly had no faith in any of the assurances that they tried to give him at all.
Yep.
And that's understandable. But that also has to bring a little on them, knowing their secret, that they sold Joseph and they lied to their father about what happened to him, and gave their father great grief in the story that they allowed him to believe of his death. And so, I think that Reuben had a real huge need to try to minimize any risk for his father, and also for his brothers. And he tried to warn them against subjecting their father to any more of them. He knew what he would do.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Jacob makes that very clear.
Well, it kind of demonstrates to me that they didn't have a good relationship.
No.
You know,
yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
That they could keep this going for years and years and years. And
allowing him to believe that Joseph was dead. Yeah.
You know, so the one that paid attention to God
was Egypt. Yeah, and you see what he's trying to do throughout this process. I believe, you know, he's trying to drag this confession and repentance out of them. You, as hesitant as they are to want to give it, you know, but they, he's just this whole process of sending, you know, throwing them in jail and sending them back, and saying, "You're not coming back. You're not going to see me again unless you bring, you know, Benjamin," and all this stuff that he does, he's clearly trying to drag this out of them. And, you know, I also think that you see how greatly it affected Jacob to lose Joseph. Because before this happens, you know, Joseph, Jacob, all right, it's hard to get those two names. Jacob had really developed, you know, to a man of great faithfulness and leadership, but now all of a sudden you fast forward 20 years, and the next time you see him, now what do you see in Jacob? He's kind of broken. He's old, bitter, you know, fearing, faithless almost. You know, we're go down and buy food lest we die, you know, and you're not going, "I'm not sending Benjamin with you. I don't trust you. You know, I can't be bereaved of him too." And you know, all of the, he just doesn't believe that anything is, and he says, "All of this has come down upon me." And then finally, he just kind of—he's not accepting that he won't send. Absolutely, he's willing to leave Simeon in prison. He's willing to make that trade-off to leave Simeon in prison in Egypt in order to retain Benjamin. You know, and then finally, in chapter 43, he says, "Fine, you know, fine. If I'm bereaved of my children, then I'm bereaved." You know, but he literally says at the end of chapter 42, you know, if anything happens to Benjamin, it will kill me. And so you see a little bit of a difference. You know, I don't necessarily want to say a lack of faith, but I think you said it well when you said he's just sort of broken. Losing a child, right, can do that to you. Larry?
I only wonder, reading this, if the boy's ever told Jacob what they did.
No. No, not really.
Because, you know, did Jacob ever question why all of a sudden Joseph showed up? You know, I mean, as a father, I would be wondering why they bring me back a rope saying while he was killed, bald, or whatever.
Well, it's not until the second time that they go back and they find out, and Joseph reveals himself to them, and then he sends them back to get Jacob and all the rest of their family. It's not until they go back that they tell Jacob that Joseph is alive at that point. That's the first time that he finds out, that he hears it.
But I always wondered why he didn't ask questions. Just,
he believed the evidence that they presented him.
Yeah. That's all they brought. Was the
blood. Yeah, and again, it's like, it just goes to show how far a deception can go and how easily we can be deceived. Yeah, and you never stop grieving for that. But, you know, one thing that I want us to see is hopefully you read through chapter 42 a couple times. What happens to us? And because we see that they never let go of this. It obviously was plaguing their conscience. What happens to us when we hold on to a secret or onto some sort of guilt over time?
It festers.
It's like a cancer.
It changes.
Yeah. Confidence falls. It severs relationships, not only between you and other people, but between you and God. You can never truly be happy. It eats you alive.
It either breaks you from your guilt or it hardens you.
Yeah, that the opposite can happen as well, right? It can harden you to where you just have no feeling at all. Yeah. Beverly? Right. Yeah. Yeah. Having that hardness of heart that says, I'm not going to forgive somebody else as well. Larry?
There's only secrets from man. There's no secrets.
That's right. And part of that, I think, is what makes us feel so guilty is because we know. We know that no matter what we do, God knows. You can't hide it from Him. And so we got to listen to our conscience, you know, for one thing. But then, so what happens then once we let that go? Once. Freedom. You know, the chains of guilt, the weight, it's gone. And it's amazing how different and how relationships can only then be restored whenever we let go of that guilt and we confess those sins.
I don't know exactly, but I don't think that Joseph told on his brothers. What he said, God brought me down here. This is God's plan. And God's plan was for that family into a mighty nation. And so he wasn't going to cause problems and that he wasn't going to cause his father any
heartache
beyond what he had. And so I think he didn't tell his brothers to tell. I don't think Jacob ever knew that. Of course, one thing God did for Jacob, he gave him 17 years of Joseph.
Yeah.
And he gave him 17 years after that.
Yeah.
So there's... Can you imagine Jacob and the pride he had of his son, the one that he really loves, and once two of them right, he's head of Egypt?
Right.
I mean, you know, the pride, the feelings, the reward for all those years of bad.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that Joseph, he never takes the opportunities to blame his brothers, even though in the narrative we're presented with, you know, at least two or three really good opportunities for him to blame them, and he never does that. No, it's not recorded specifically where they all go to Jacob and say, no, this is what actually happened, we actually deceived you, and we tossed his coat in blood and, you know, ripped it up and then gave it to you. I mean, it never says that, but whether he figured that out on his own when he heard that they were alive or what, we don't know. But obviously, the bigger point, though, is that the family relationship was restored. And repentance came about in the hearts of the brothers.
Well, he may not have ratted them out, but he did throw them all in prison.
He did that. He did that.
He deserved that.
But again, why do you think that he did that? I think there's a couple reasons for it. I think number one, he put them in prison to experience for just a little while what he experienced for however 13 years. But also to assert his control. Right? He was trying to get them to a point where they were willing to do whatever he told them to, you know, bring his family back, bring his brother back to them later. And so he's asserting his control and kind of twisting their arm to get them to where they're in a position. Again, he's trying to drag this repentance and confession out of them and change their hearts.
It was Simeon that he kept right for a while.
Yeah.
And Jay and I were talking about this a few days ago, how it was probably months.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't get to talk to Joseph because Joseph didn't reveal himself until after they were all back.
Yeah.
Which means he was probably like... you know, like locked away for several months.
Months.
While they went back to
easily.
Canaan. And so, Timothy, I really have to pay probably the hardest.
Yeah.
kept in prison for so long.
And as you get into the next chapter, too, I think it's Judah that says, look, you know, He says to Jacob, look, if you had just let us go back with Benjamin, we could have returned twice now. And so obviously there's been, and they run out of food, and he says, go back. So obviously it's been a long time. It's long enough for them to run out of food and say, we could have made this journey two more times by now on foot. So yeah, there's obviously been probably months that have passed where Simeon was locked up, which is really, really interesting about this. Yeah, some of these details are escaping me at the moment, but yeah, I mean, it's obviously a great deal of time. Hey, Larry?
Stop and think about it. They cost Joseph in a pit. He got to turn back.
Yeah.
Join them in a pit.
Yeah, but again, but that's not to say that he wasn't being merciful. I mean, obviously, he was still being very merciful, and it was to serve a purpose. But it's also not to say that they didn't deserve it. Yeah. Russ? Oh man, 10 miles maybe.
Yeah.
Easily, yeah.
So you're talking at least a month for a round trip.
Mm-hmm.
And the time frame in between those one-way trips.
Yeah, this is a big deal. This is a big deal.
Do you suppose that Jacob did want to send Benjamin because he was the
Oh, that's absolutely why. Yeah, 100%. He valued Joseph and again, you see the favoritism, but he valued Joseph and Benjamin over the other sons because of his attachment to Rachel. Yeah, and even goes so far as to say that very specifically in chapter 43. Where is it exactly? But. Anyway, I can't remember now, but it says in somewhere in 42 or 43, he says specifically, you know, look, the only other son of Rachel, and you're gonna take him from me. 43:29. Yeah. And also just the fact that he's the absolute youngest. You know, at the time Joseph was the youngest, but then within Benjamin being born after that, and now Benjamin's the youngest, so he's not gonna. There's gonna be some. Maybe a little bit easier treatment there. And so he's like, look, this isn't happening. I'm not seeing him. I'm not doing it. And so that's kind of where we leave off there. But I kind of jumped around. But we'll pick up again in chapter 42 where the brothers come and they bow their faces before him. And so we see the dream being fulfilled there. So we'll talk about that for a second when we begin next week.